The name of the new book is Job Security, a composite portrait of the expanding American security industry by Danny Goodwin and Edward Schwarzschild. Danny is professor and chair of the Department of Art and Art History at the University at Albany SUNY. Ed is professor and director of creative writing in the English department at the University at Albany. And not only is Job Security a book, it is also an exhibit at the University Art Museum, Job Security Voices and Views from the American Security Industry, running now through December 9th. We'll get into the differences and similarities between the two in just a moment, but it's a great pleasure to welcome you both to the program. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Joe. It's great to be here, Joe.
Very nice to have you with us. Danny, let's begin with you. How did this whole project come about?
Well, about 8 years ago. I mean, it goes back further than that, right? It goes back to when Ed and I first met, which would be 2001. Ed did his PhD dissertation on collaborations between writers and photographers. And so when he got to campus, he went looking for a photographer with whom to collaborate and found me. And we never figured out a way to collab. Well, it took us a while to figure out how to collaborate. And we discovered that both of our fathers had some involvement in national security or security military stuff variously. And thought, okay, that might be a thing. And then started.
I believe it was 2015, maybe?
2015. College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity popped up. And we thought, this is a thing. It might mean something.
Right.
And also, maybe this is when we actually do this and collaborate.
Now, Ed, so correct me if I'm wrong, but you were now at this point writing about these issues. Your past book and work is writing about security and right here in Albany.
That's right. Yeah, my last novel was called Insecurity. I'm going to have a tough time figuring out the title for my next book. I don't know how else to put security in a title. But yeah, my last book was a novel called Insecurity that in some ways grew out of the experience of working for the TSA at Albany International Airport. I worked there just for a few months, but that really informed the main character of that book. And part of the connection between that book and this new book is that it wasn't something I intended, but working at the TSA, I became more and more interested in the individuals doing the labor of security work and what kind of people were they, who were they, why were they doing these particular jobs. And that's what drove Danny and I to start interviewing people who worked at all levels of the security industry in the United States, from Border Patrol to CIA to Homeland Security, all at various levels of they could be chiefs, they could be new employees, and we just wanted to talk to them and ask them what it was like to do this work and what they thought it was like for their families.
Yeah.
Why is it, in your mind, why is it, Danny, important for us to know that, the answers to those questions?
Well, one of the organizing principles early on was this is a growth industry. What does that signal for this country, for me, for Ed, for our families, for everyone? What does this mean? And so, that's kind of what the humanities do, right? We look at these phenomena and we ask, what does this mean? So I think, talking to experts, so-called experts at every level, gives us a kind of window into what this means, because we're not seeking classified information by any means. It's more like, okay, what is it like to live a life where you have to hold so much secret from your family, for example? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like the way we understand black holes is by observing their influence on other things. And that's kind of what this is like, this world of secrecy. We understand it, or we appreciate it through its impact on the rest of people's lives.
Right.
Let me just go to a question for a benchmark sake more than anything else. But did you have to, the two of you, Ed, have to come up with a mutually agreeable definition of security?
That's a great question, Joe, right? Because that would be a difficult definition to write.
Right.
What is security? Security for whom? Security at what cost? So I think at the start of the project, we were just following something we were interested in. We didn't have a definition to begin with, but I think we discovered more as we went along, and we narrowed down the range of what security meant for us. So we were mostly focused on government-related security labor. We didn't talk to police officers, you know, we didn't talk to security guards at malls or anything like that. We looked at people who are working for the Department of Homeland Security or connected to the Department of Homeland Security. And we also looked at people who had been affected by the security state and maybe had become critics of what was going on with the expansion of the security state.
And how do you identify, Danny, of those who have been affected? I mean, in the sense of, okay, so this is someone who has had a brush with this system, mm-hmm. and this is their experience.
That's why the project took 8 years, right?
Yeah. Is it we oh, the good stuff takes time, doesn't it?
Yeah, man. I mean, we started out getting connections and tips of people that we should speak with through our connections at the university, through CEHC. And then, you know, working with the press, MIT, figured we need to talk to people on the inside and the outside. We need to talk to critics and targets and equally expert. You know, for example, you know, we talked to an FBI surveillance expert who's not in the FBI. She's the president of the Muslim Justice League in Boston, has a lot of experience with FBI surveillance. So, you know, she's just as much an expert as an actual FBI agent, we've come to realize.
Was the idea, Ed, for it always to be a book and an exhibit?
I think that's right. We always imagined a book exhibit and then maybe a web presence as well. Because, you know, there's 18 interviews in the book, Joe, and there's a few more photographs, portraits in the museum show. But we're well aware that it's just the beginning of a project. I mean, we're doing our best to make this composite portrait, but it's something that needs to continue to grow, to grow on an international level, but also to grow on a national level.
You use the word composite, and that just made me think of, man, that can, I mean, that seemed like that could drive you nuts. You walk out and you go, oh, we should probably have that in here too, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
You ran into that a lot.
For sure. It's an incomplete. I mean, that should be in the title. An incomplete composite portrait.
In progress.
Yeah. Yeah, but then people want to help. You don't want that. Yeah, as far as the people that you meet along the way, that has to be just incredibly rewarding.
Absolutely. I mean, we're so grateful to all the people who shared their stories with us. When we were talking to people, we weren't asking them for classified information. Because of our background, we grew up with fathers who kept things secret, and we've thought about the implications of that for us and our families. And those are the kind of questions we wanted to ask the people we talked with. What has it been like for you to be a father or a mother or a child in a family that is deeply involved in security work? And the stories that people shared with us were consistently surprising, and they felt very intimate, and we wanted to do right by them if we possibly could.
One of the parts of the book that is especially, well, always amazingly relevant, but also just fascinating is that of the border, and mm-hmm. specifically the U.S.-Mexican border. And I'll start with you, Danny. There's a portfolio in the book of the work of photographs that you took along the border. This is following interviews that have taken place. But you're taking these pictures, you know, just like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
It has been in tumult for a very, very long time, certainly while you were there.
Sure. Yeah, that is one of the most striking sections of the book, and you know, as a segue into the exhibition as well. You know, one of the things that comes out through talking with people is we set up these sort of virtual conversations. These are people who haven't talked to each other, probably never will talk to each other. But in the case of a couple of them, Francisco Cantu, former Border Patrol agent, and Carla Provost, former Border Patrol chief for the United States under Trump, they're talking about the same subject. They're talking about the weaponization of the desert, and they're talking about, you know, kids in cages, and you know, one as a sort of policymaker, one as the enactor of the policy who endured a certain moral injury and then wrote about it.
You wanted it to be their stories, Ed.
That's exactly right. And we wanted it to be what Danny's describing, conversations that maybe don't take place in the world, but should take place, so we could make them take place in the book, in the exhibition. I mean, we need these people to talk to each other. We need to talk to people on both sides so we can better understand this vexing issue that just won't go away otherwise.
So give me a sense of your role as a facilitator, as an author, as a writer, of working on these various stories and profiles.
Sure. I mean, it's not work I've done before, so it was really enlightening for me and humbling to do this project. We would interview people. The interviews could last an hour, 2 hours. Then we would get a transcript of the entire interview, which would be, it could be 30,000 words. They were long interviews, one that you included all the things we said and all the things that the interviewee said. And then my job as the writer or the editor, you know, sometimes that boundary seemed a little porous, but my job was to craft a narrative from those bigger documents, make something about 5,000 words that had a beginning, middle, and an end. And the sort of rule I set for myself was that I could not add any words. You know, every word in the interview comes from what was spoken in the interview. But I did give myself some freedom in terms of arranging. Not everything was set in order, you know, because it's a conversation that unfolds.
Mm-hmm. So editing. I mean, it's editing and putting it in a cohesive fashion. Right.
And removing our voices.
Yes.
A lot of and and, you know.
Well, when people hear this interview, all of that will be gone.
Thank goodness.
Wonderful editors who do that. Yes.
Right.
It's good stuff. I think I'm right on this, but from my memory of going through the book, all black and white?
No. Black and white portraits of individuals, yes. A black and white portfolio of border stuff, mostly the actual border wall itself, and then color photographs, large format color photographs of training facilities, security training facilities in Oriskany, New York, on the site of the former Griffiths Air Force Base, the State Preparedness Training Center. And color photographs, large color photographs of tabletop models made of paper of sites where interviews took place and I was not able to get photographs, or in many cases, sites that we were denied access to.
So on the cover of the brochure for the art exhibit, there is just a very striking photo. What is that?
That is USAR. That's the Urban Search and Rescue Simulator, a training facility for the tall stacked storage container simulates rescuing someone who's fallen down an elevator shaft. The rest of the rubble piled around, and the cars are a good scale indicator that are piled up in the rubble.
That's for
search and rescue for bomb victims and bomb sniffing dogs and lots of scenarios that security personnel and law enforcement reenact.
It seems like a photo like this sets the tone, and I'm interested in the tone you think it sets.
Yeah, I mean, it's heavy, right? So it's a lot of these photographs, these are uncanny spaces. They look like spaces in the real world because they are in the real world, but they're not what they appear to be. So,
right, because I looked at this and said, oh, a grain elevator.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and it's not.
And you fold that out, it's a nice little thing that folds out into a very large, not very large, but a poster.
Right.
The photograph in the exhibition is 7 feet tall, and it's of a drugstore, which is, you know, on initial inspection, it's a drugstore.
You know, Radio Origami is a lot of fun. There we go. Look at that.
That plays well.
City Drugs.
Radio. Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah, so, that's beautiful.
So one of the things you notice is you know, you feel like you know where you are. You're you know, in a parking lot of a drugstore. And then the sort of ridiculous over-description of the large format, the 4x5 view camera, reveals a conspicuous lack of detail and information in the real world. So there's something missing and there's something wrong, and that clues you in that this is not a drugstore.
And when I first saw this, I thought... And maybe it's because of the striking nature of the border material that this is not something that I would expect to see in New York.
Right. This is any town, USA.
Right.
And yeah, there are simulation facilities. You know, there's a high school, there's a drugstore, there's you know, a bar, there's a you know, city hall, there's a bank.
How do they use the word simulators and the people that you are talking to of how one gets that gig to inhabit those spaces to do the work that is necessary?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just tell you the story of when we went. You know, we tried for years to get access and finally did. And on the day that we went, having requested a time when there would be no people wandering around into the frame, because I really wanted photographs of the structures, they booked us during the Excelsior Challenge, where law enforcement from all around New York State descend upon the place to compete for these simulations that have been kind of scripted. And they discover when they roll up what the simulation is going to be, and they have to respond and then be critiqued for their response.
From knowing time, you're doing a lot of this work during the pandemic, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we had to do some of the interviews over Zoom, but all the photographs were, you know, in person. We couldn't. The portrait photograph on the Zoom camera doesn't really work out.
No, it didn't cut it. No, so there are a lot of trips, air flight, cancellations, overnights, to roll up and take a 40-minute photograph.
You know, one of our good friends on this program from the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity is Bob Griffin. And it would be remiss, because I think people will make the connection as you've said it, but that is something that he obviously has worked at and I assume helped in this project in some ways.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, there have been so many people who were helpful, and Bob is like high up on the list. But we're so grateful to so many people. I mean, Bob, the whole staff at the University Art Museum, the university itself has provided crucial funding for the exhibition. The acknowledgments in the book is somewhat long because there's so many people to thank.
And that seems to me to, if there is a, I don't know, is this an appropriate word, but fun to be able to talk to that many people, no matter what the subject is, to get an idea, to get to the bottom of it. Let's erase the word incomplete for a moment and just pretend that it is complete. that you get to the bottom of it and you say, okay, this is a pretty good group of people to work with to get that vibe.
For sure, for sure. I mean, yes. We've collaborated closely with Bob for a while, and he gets what we're doing to a degree that not every participant has, honestly. I mean, he appreciates the critical approach that we bring to this entire enterprise, and he welcomes that conversation. In fact, we are team teaching a graduate course with Bob, Ed, and I that will take place in the museum, where we're teaming up writers, artists, and graduate students in CEHC.
Oh, God bless you on that. It seems to me that this is a world that most of us don't know. Right? I mean, this is a world that we just don't know. And I know you touched on this at the beginning when we were talking, but why don't we know? I mean, I know security and privacy, they go together and that makes sense. But man, the fact of what's being done to keep us secure, you think we'd have some idea, which maybe I'm taking a leap too far, but I'm going to use the example of the recent assassination attempt with former President of the United States, where you say to yourself, well, good God, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And an assumption that could never happen in a billion years, and yet it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fascinating to us, Joe, obviously. Like, who are these people, and what are their stories, and why don't we know these stories? And I would say one potential way to sort of talk about that is, We assume we know. Like, we have a tendency, I think, in our society to either villainize the people who do this work or to make them into heroes. And we don't necessarily look at the middle. Like what are the more complicated stories about these individuals? Who were the people working that day that you're referencing when the assassination attempt occurred? I think it would be really interesting to talk to everybody there, and they would all have their own story about how they came to be there, what went wrong, and we would learn a lot about the whole scene if we had the time, right, to sit down and talk to everybody. It would make the story more complicated. It might not tell us all the answers to that day, but we would have a richer understanding of what occurred and who was involved.
Will you continue to do aspects of this work?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
you're on this beat now.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, back to one of your earlier questions about how we define security, I think everyone has their own definition, and we assume that we all agree on its definition. But I think if you talk to 1,000 people some involved in security on the inside and some who are just impacted by it, which, by the way, is everyone. Everyone is impacted by, you know, security enterprise. We'll all have a slightly different definition. So we realized doing this book that all that we don't know. That's a really clumsy way to say that. But, you know, we learned a little in 8 years of doing this. But we also learned how much we don't know, how much is behind the scenes. And, you know, there's a presumed inside and outside to the enterprise for sure. And yet understanding is important. Pausing, listening.
I'm sorry to interrupt. It's also really important to think about it in terms of an international scope, right? Like, this book is very bounded by the United States, but the issues we're talking about are global. And part of what we've been doing, I spent the last semester in Amsterdam working with a bunch of security labor scholars from around the world just to compare and contrast the experiences and understandings of what security means and how it's being addressed in Israel, Palestine, in India, in countries in Africa. So it's important to look outside our own borders too to see how this issue is being addressed.
Danny Goodwin is professor and chair of the Department of Art and Art History at the University at Albany SUNY. Ed Schwarzschild is professor and director of creative writing in the English department at the University at Albany. The book is Job Security, a Composite Portrait of the Expanding American Security Industry. It is published by MIT Press. The exhibit, Job Security, Voices and Views from the American Security Industry, is at the University Art Museum at the University at Albany on the campus of the State University of New York, running through December 9th. Gentlemen, what a great pleasure to speak to you both. Thank you very much for telling us these incredible stories and sharing with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Joe, for having us.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. Again, Job Security. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.